Hello, I'm Brian Foster, and today I'm talking about Spiritism. Today is April 17th, 2022, and happy Easter for those who celebrate Easter at this time. Before we begin, I'd like to start with a small prayer. Dear Jesus, help us in this times of trouble and times of strife, for people to be more understanding, to be more spiritually mature, and for the earth to become full and of good and mature souls. We can reach this. Other planets have been there and have done this, have reached the state of no wars and cooperation between nations. We can do the same. It is a matter of our collective human effort and wish to ascend spiritually. Please help us in this task. Amen. Now, before I begin, if you're interested in Spiritism, I suggest you download my free PDF. Oh, let me put this up here first. Spiritism 101, the Third Revelation. You can download that from nwspiritism.com. And it's just right on the right-hand navigation bar. You'll find it. It says download free PDF. You can also, of course, get it in Kindle, paperback, and in Audible format. And Kindle, I think it's at 99 cents. So it's a short book, 100 pages, gives you an overview. I think that would help you a lot to understand Spiritism, understand the basic tenets of Spiritism. And then after that, I suggest you read the Spirit's Book, which was codified by Allan Kardec in the 1850s. That is the headwaters of Spiritism. That is the Third Revelation. And it's a series of 1,019 questions that Allan Kardec had different mediums ask spirits throughout, you know, usually around the geography around France, but further afield than that, around Paris, I mean. And he did not use the answers listed. They were the same or similar. So given that, Allan Kardec also created a series of magazines, monthly magazines. And what we are going through now is a series of of magazines articles in 1859. And what I'm doing in this live stream is going through which I think are the interesting ones. There's a lot of stuff in there that's housekeeping and kind of out of date, but I'm trying to what I think are articles that are interesting to people in our current times. Okay, so let's begin. This is Family Conversations from Beyond the Grave. Paul Gaimard, Navy physician and naturalist traveler, died on December 11, 1858, at the age of 64. He was evoked on the 24th of the same month by one of his friends, Mr. Sardou. Evocation: I am here. What do you want? Now they're talking to Paul Gaimard. The question is, what is your current state? I am errant, like the spirits who leave Earth and feel the desire to advance through the good path. We seek enlightenment, and later we choose. 3. Have your ideas about the nature of human beings modified? Very much. You can assess that well. 4. What do you think now about the kind of life that led you in existence that you have just left on Earth? And he answers, I am happy since I have worked. And again, this is something I would like us all to look at, because he is happy now because he actually worked on his spirituality. He actually worked on trying to make himself a better person, understand what was going to await him when he passed over. And what awaits you is you are still who you are. You don't turn into this angel on some sort of Elysian fields and sing hymns all day. No, you are who you are. You especially if you're a spiritist, you go and they let you work right away. You go into one of the levels of heaven. You are either you have your house waiting for you, or you're assigned some place to live. All is up to you and where you've been in previous lives. Okay, let's do 5. You thought that everything ends at the grave, thus the Epicureanism and the desire that you sometimes express of living for centuries in order to enjoy life well. What do you think about those who have that philosophy? And he answers, I am sorry for them. However, that thinking is useful to them. With such a philosophy, they can coolly appreciate everything that excites others. This allows them to judge in a sound way many things that easily fascinate the credulous. Observation. This is a personal opinion of the spirit that we give as such and not as a maxim. Number six. A person that endeavors morally and more than intellectually does better than the one that is bonded to the intellectual progress above all and neglects the moral. The answer is yes, the moral aspect is more important. God gives spirit as a reward to the good ones, whereas the moral must be acquired. And exactly. I mean, this, before I explain that more, number seven, what do you understand by spirit given by God? And that is a vast intelligence. So, and we've heard this, I've heard this many times, is you can be intelligent and you can be an intelligent human on earth and you can be not so intelligent. Yet when you're a spirit, if you're someone that was just had a governor placed on it, so you probably use your intelligence too much in your previous life, or you are just a normal spirit and you haven't really emphasized your intelligence. There's all ranges. Now, the main thing to remember is there's no such thing as a limit on your intelligence as a spirit. All spirits are truly created equal. You can work on acquiring knowledge all you want and just practicing your analytical skills, and you'll become just as intelligent as anybody else, as if that's your goal. You can also become more loving. It's what you want to do. Whereas on earth, we are equal under the law, right? But we all know that we're not physically equal or even intellectually equal. We all have our little place on the hierarchy. I will never be a famous basketball player. That's not in me. But in the spirit world, I could be whatever I want if I want to concentrate on that ideal or that goal. And therefore, now the other thing they do is that you have, in order to rise in heaven, you have to have a balance of both. And in fact, he's absolutely correct when he says the moral aspect is more important. There was this wonderful passage where this man had just recently died. His wife went before him. And he was in heaven. He goes, well, I haven't seen my wife. He goes, well, your wife is more advanced than you. Now, I know, this is what the spirit told him, that you think your wife was not as intellectually advanced as you, which is true. But she had what was more important, which was love and understanding and empathy. And that is more important here in the heavenly levels than just pure intellect. You need a combination of both. So here's a man who basically thought, and he actually was said, yes, you are more intellectually powerful at this point in time than your partner. But your partner's higher because your partner has learned more love, and she's probably acquired wisdom, which is a combination of love and knowledge. That's why it is so important. And in fact, that's what spirits tell us a lot, is that there's actually women have a tendency to go higher in the spirit world because of the harder trials and tribulations they had in the past, thousands and thousands of years, and who knows how many lives each spirit had. They were given a harder time. And, things are changing now, thank heavens. But again, in fact, the spirits have told us, and this is in one of my books, How We Are Guided by Spirits, Book 3 of Spiritism, is that women will take, and they don't say a leadership position. They will take more of a leadership position because they found out that the systems created by men trying to conform to God still did not create a peace and a harmony on earth. But what they said is that women will step up and guide. They won't be that aggressive leader, but they'll be that empathetic, loving, and caring guide for the human race. And they'll work together. But that is what they said is what will happen in the future. And they've also said, and very interestingly, and this was a message given, I think, around 1910s or before 1920. They said, and women will go through this period of thinking they need to be like men, but they'll find out that no, that's there's why be like men when you can be Superior, right? And it seems like we're going through that period recently. So it just shows you that the spirit world knows what's going on. They know what's going on, what's happening, and will happen in the future. This was given to us in over 100 years ago. Okay, I'll carry on. Number 8. However, there are many evil ones that have a vast intelligence. And the answer is, I told you already, you asked what would be better to endeavor to acquire. And I said that the moral would be preferable. But the one who works for the betterment of their spirit may acquire a high degree of intelligence. When will you understand it? So yes, and they're in, and these are the ones that, you know, when the Catholic Church and Christianity says they're Satan and they're always plotting against us. Well, there is no such thing as the devil per se. That was not created by God. But there are lower spirits who are highly intelligent, who will create plots and intrigues for anyone who wants to better themselves spiritually, anyone who wants to better the earth, to be a better place, to be a more loving place and caring and charitable. And they will plan, and they are not stupid. And they have a high degree of intelligence. But at some point in time, going through the different trials and tribulations, they will learn and they will become good spirits and pure spirits just like the rest of us at some point in time. At the rate of which they will improve and when they will get there is up to them. They have free will. Number 9, are you completely detached from the material influence of the body? The answer is yes. What you have been told about it only encompasses a small portion of humanity. Note, it happens sometimes that evoked spirits, even a few months after their death, declared to be still under the influence of matter. All of them, though, were people that have not progressed morally or intellectually. It is to this part of humanity that the spirit of Paul Guimard refers. Number 10. And yes, that happens, but before I end, is that people who are not spiritually elevated do believe they're still tied intellectually and emotionally to earth. And they will still be in their houses or still be around their family, not knowing what to do. Hopefully at some point in time, they will ask for help and they will get help from higher spiritual authorities. Number 10, have you had other existences on earth? Besides the last one, the answer is yes. Was the latest one a consequence of the preceding one? No, there was a large interval between them. Now, actually there is. Oh, he actually answers that next question because there always is some sort of consequence because of karma. But let's see what he says in the next question. Number 12, despite the interval, however, couldn't there be a relationship between those two existences? The answer is, if you understand me well, each minute of our lives is a consequence of the preceding minute. So, yes. Now, he's probably, but let's see what the note says first. Attending this meeting, Dr. B gave his opinion that certain instincts sometimes awake us could well be the reflex of a preceding existence. He mentioned several cases perfectly verified in young ladies who, during their pregnancy, were led to erratic behavior like the one that grabbed the arm of a young butcher, biting him ferociously. Another one that beheaded a child, and the lady herself took the child to the police commissioner. A third one that killed her husband, sliced him into pieces, salted him, feeding herself from him for several days. The doctor then asked if in previous existences, wouldn't those ladies have been anthropophagous? I don't know what that word is. I haven't seen that. Number 13, you heard what Dr. B just mentioned. Would these instincts, which go by the name of desire in pregnant ladies, be a consequence of habits held in a previous existence? No. The answer is no. These are transient madness, a passion in its highest degree. The spirit becomes eclipsed by the will. And then note, Dr. B indicates that the physicians really consider these acts as transient madness. We share such opinion, but for other reasons, since persons are not familiar with the spiritist phenomena, are led to attribute them to exclusive causes that are known to them. We are persuaded that we must have the reminiscences of certain previous moral dispositions. We will even say that it is impossible that things occur differently, since progress only takes place gradually. But this is not the case here, because the persons gave no sign of ferocity before the pathological state. There was evidently only temporary perturbation of the moral faculties. The reflex of previous dispositions is recognized through other signs, unequivocal in a way which we'll develop in a special article supported by facts. Now, let me talk about this for a second. There was this wonderful, and I forgot where I read it, from by a spirit, talking about pregnant women. And they said some of the times that pregnant women will do these strange things and act in a strange way is because they are being somewhat possessed. Think about this for a second. They have another soul inside them, a soul that is now into this fetus, and that is, and through no fault of the mother's, it is interacting with the soul inside them. And the instincts and the thoughts, and of course, when you're a fetus, you review your whole life, is your mother is affected by the past life, past lives of the fetus inside her. And that's why sometimes strange things happen. It's almost like the mother's being possessed, sometimes really good ways, and sometimes strange, and sometimes bad ways. And I've never heard that before, and I thought that was extremely interesting, and I think could answer for a lot of different things that happen to women who are pregnant. So I thought that was very interesting that, yes, because you think, you know, we talk about possession of a spirit, possessing a physical body when someone else is in that physical body, but what else, what is possession better than a pregnant woman with a separate soul inside themselves that has to be by their thoughts affecting them? Number 14. Have you accomplished simultaneous moral as well as intellectual progress in your last existence? And the answer is yes, mainly intellectual. Number 15. Could you tell us what kind of life you had in your life before the last one? The answer is, oh, I was obscure. I had a family that I made unhappy. Later, I had to expiate in a hard way. But why do you ask me? That is over, and now I'm in a new phase. Note, Paul Gimard died single at the age of 64. More than once, he regretted not having had a family. So again, this is a very interesting note here, because, and this happens quite a lot, people who have treated their family terribly do not have the right of having a family in their next life. In fact, this was talked about in a wonderful book, Memoirs of a Suicide by Yvonne Piera. And this one man who had, I think, throat cancer, he embezzled money from the bank he worked at. And then when he was caught and he had a family, he committed suicide. And in his planning for his next life, he said, I will have some money. I will help an orphanage. I'm not allowed a family because I betrayed and left my family by themselves. So therefore, my family will have to be me helping the orphans. And again, this is a typical response. Remember, karma is always there. You'll never escape it. In fact, remember, it's the intent that makes the difference. If you're a primitive spirit, or let's say you're a five-year-old and you harm something or, you know, break something that's valuable because you don't know what you're doing, that is not something bad you did that because your intent, you didn't know. But if you're 30 and you take someone's possession and you break it, that karma is going to come back and hit you, because you knew what you did. And again, this is what happens when, if you have a family made unhappy, you are going to have to expiate in a hard way. And that's why he did not have a family in his next life. So, something to remember. 16, do you expect to reincarnate soon? The answer is no, I want to study first. We like this Aaron state because the soul is more its own self. The spirit has more consciousness of its strength. The flesh weighs, darkens, and hinders. Note, all spirits say that they study, do research, and observe in the errant state in order to make a choice. Isn't that the counterpart of corporeal life? Don't we make mistakes sometimes for years before we select a career that we consider more adequate to our progress? Don't we sometimes change it as we get more mature? Don't we go about every day trying to establish what to do next? Well, what do the several corporeal existences represent to the spirit other than periods, days of the spirit life? That is, as we know, the normal life, for the corporeal life is only transient and passing. Nothing more sublime than this theory. Isn't it that in perfect agreement with the harmonious grandiosity of the universe? Still, once more, it is not us who invented that, and we are sorry for not having that merit. Nevertheless, the more we go deep into the theory, the more we find it productive in solving the problems that were inexplicable hitherto. Now, let me explain a little bit more. People who are in heaven will reincarnate when they want to. They have free will. And you can study. In fact, if you want to just do nothing, you have the right to park yourself in life after life. You also have the right to park yourself in heaven and just do nothing. You'll still have a place to stay. You'll always be offered jobs. But if you want to do nothing, you can do that. You have free will. But if you're in the lower zone or the dark abyss, and it's time, and the spirit world decides, I think it's time for that person to incarnate again, they will incarnate them. They do not have the choice. They do not have the choice of the trials and tribulations and where their life is going. They're just, I'm sure there's exceptions to that, but they're just put there. Now, if you're in heaven at whatever level, you work with your spirit mentors and other people and teams of people. You plan out your body. You plan out your trials and tribulations. Now, I will say for people who are really like fed up with their life and say, oh, this is too tough. Most probably, you made things tough because you want to atone for some wrong you did. And I know this is much easier for me to say it than for people to accept it. But when you go through these hard times, if you can get an attitude like, okay, I'm going to check that box off. I'm going to learn from this. Whatever someone did wrong to me or what I'm going through, I will never do the same for them. Because in some previous life, you did something similar. Not exactly maybe, but something similar. And if you accept it, say, okay, I'm learning my lesson. And remember, the trial could be extremely emotionally tough. And the only reason that it's emotionally tough is because you probably had a much more subtle trial to try and teach you how to be better, and you ignored it. That, I mean, we're stubborn humans. And sometimes we need tough trials. I know I did. So, and then also the part is that in the state when you're in heaven, the harmony, you're there with people who are like you, right? The narrow door of heaven. It's the law of affinity places you with people on your spiritual maturity level. You are positive. There's no negative gossip. There's no stabbing in the back to be in charge of something, because that's never going to happen. They can see you. They can see you. You're all out there, right? Your inside is reflected on your outside. Whereas on earth, it's hidden. But in the spirit world, it's all laid out. And that's why I keep saying, if you want to improve yourself, get yourself ready for heaven. Rewire your brain, change your character and your personality. Do not think ill of people. It's the first step is not to say it. Just like your mother said, if you can't say something nice, don't say something at all. Do the next step. If you can't think something nice, change your thoughts and think of something nice then. That's how you're going to really get ready for heaven. Okay, number 17. In which planet do you plan or wish to reincarnate? And the answer is, I don't know. Give me time to search. And a lot of times that you will be given, you'll be given help. It's like going to a college and looking at the catalog and you go, well, where's the best place for me? And they will give you suggestions. And some people will go to a planet for one life and come back to Earth. Some people will say, oh, leave Earth behind and say, that's the end of that one. Right. And so that will happen. And you will go to where it's best for you. And this is the main thing. Remember, whatever you think is going on in the world, going on in your life, going on in your friend's life, going on in your family's life, all this chaos and corruption and people taking advantage of the current events, it's all for one purpose. And it's not punishment. It's for your education. And that's why, you know, when you see all this, you know, just complete incompetence in government and trying to steal the money that you have, right? Because I've done that before in past lives, and just take power that they do not at all deserve, and make decisions and attack nations and so on and so forth. Look at it as a show. As you're watching a movie saying, oh, okay, well, that was stupid. I'll never do that. Take that to heart. Because at some future life, maybe not on Earth, some other planet, you'll be in a position of responsibility where you can decide not to do those stupid things. It's all meant for your edification. And the people who are doing these power grabs and taking advantage of situations, they will all accumulate karma, and they'll all pay the penalty. They will learn at some next existence why what they did was not correct. It may take them several lives. But we went through the same thing. That's why don't be prideful, because in reality, you don't have anything to be prideful about. I mean, it's good to be a little bit prideful, the fact that you're trying to improve yourself spiritually and become a better person. That's wonderful. But don't think that you're better than anybody else, because you've been there. You've done whatever they've done. You've probably done worse at some past life. And that's why we have to keep our humbleness and our, you know, and it actually, Chico Xavier, when someone asked him, Chico, because the guy didn't really like Chico, he thought he was kind of fake. He goes, Chico, are you humble or ashamed? And Chico said, I'm ashamed. Now, Chico could have said, I'm humble, but that would have said, because he was a great medium. And that could have, and but that would have been like, I'm humble because I don't want people to know how great I am. But no. Chico was such a great medium. He knew the earth in the context of the greater spiritual world. He knew himself in the context of the greater spiritual world. And Chico, who's this great medium, could do all the things, and just like the most wonderful man on earth. If he felt ashamed, what should we feel? I mean, this is one of the things we have to work against, of being too physical centric, meaning that we're physical human beings. There's no one can feel like us or create like us. No, I'm sorry. You're a spirit. You can do the same. And in the spirit, you're an encapsulation of a personality and character. You don't have a physical body. You have an appearance of a physical body called your paraspirit. That's because you want it to, because of what you're thinking. Just like long ago when men thought that their sun revolved around the earth and the earth was the center of the universe. Now we think we, physical humans, are the center of the universe. And in fact, we live and then when we die, there's nothing else. That is all wrong. We are just a grain of sand. But we have the grain of sand to be a potential to help many other grains of sand, and a potential to improve ourselves and be a productive member of spiritual society. Okay, let me carry on. Number 19. Number 18, I'm sorry. What kind of existence would you ask God for? The continuation of the last one, the greatest possible development of the intellectual faculties. Number 19, it seems that you placed intellectual development in the first line, leaving the moral faculties in second place, contrary to what you said before. He said, my heart is not sufficiently well-formed to be able to appreciate the others. So here's a person that's done deep dive and found out that, yeah, I'm not really there yet. And so I'm going to work on one until I have the well-withal to work on the other. Okay. Number 20, do you see other spirits and have a relationship with them? And he says, yes. Are there some among you with whom you were acquainted with on Earth? And he answered, yes, de Mont Duville. And this must be somebody new, but this is back in 1850, so we do not know. Do you also see the spirit of Jacques Arago, with whom you traveled? And he answered, yes. Are those spirits in the same condition as yours? He goes, no, some are more elevated, others less. We refer to the spirits of Dumont de Urville and Jacques Arago. And he says, I don't want to specify. And so, again, this is a typical higher, nice spirit. He's not going to gossip. He's not going to say, well, Jacques, he's a low spirit. He doesn't know what he's doing. And, what a screw up he was. No, they're never going to say that. I mean, if you're in a meetings meeting and a spirit comes through and starts talking bad about other people, you place them at the low spirit level right away. A spirit will never tell you you're completely wrong. They'll let you learn on your own. And again, this shows you that I'm not going to specify. Okay, number 25. Are you happy that we evoked you? Yes, particularly for one person. Number 26. Can we do anything for you? The answer is yes. Number 27, if we evoke you within a few months, would you still kindly answer our questions? And answers with pleasure, goodbye. He goes, you say goodbye, but can you please tell us where you are going to? The answer is without any waste of time to express myself as I would have done a few days ago. I will cross a space 1,000 times longer than the itinerary that I followed my journeys on Earth, which I considered so long, and in less than a second, out of a thought, I'm going into a medium of spirits where I'll take lessons and where I will be able to learn my new science, my new life. Goodbye. So, again, he's saying right there about volitation, and that is you move by the speed of thought. There is no such thing as distance. Higher spirit says there is either absence or presence. There's no distance. Now, how can that be? There's no distance. There's no distance because spirits are in this logical database, this huge area of data that can go anywhere. And then you are this encapsulated entity that can move through the data. And then you can also, if depending on your level, you can set your parameters of what you can see or not see. And in fact, when he says, I'm going to take it less than a second, so he's going to be at some level on heaven, or maybe on Earth, and then he's going to think himself to be where he's going to take this class. So he didn't travel there. He made his presence in that environment. He willed himself into that environment, and he was in that environment. So think of that. He did that by his mind. That's how the spirits say that's what Jesus did when he came back to talk to the apostles after he was crucified. And he then said, he didn't travel from heaven down to that little room in Jerusalem. He thought and he willed himself into that environment. So when you think about that, what that could be, then you should know why we're going through this boot camp called Earth, because we have to fix this thing called our personality and our character. We have to really rewire our brain. Okay, let me take the observation. Who had known Mr. Paul Gabbard perfectly well would attest that this communication is highlighted by the hallmark of his individuality. Learn, see, and get to know things were his dominant passion. This is what explains his trips around the world and to the regions of the North Pole, as well as his excursions to Russia and Poland during the first breakout of cholera in Europe. This is the 1850s, or probably before that. Dominated by his passion and his need of satisfying it, he exhibited a rare cold blood before the greatest dangers. That is how, thanks to his calmness and determination, he is able to free himself from an anthropophagus, must be primitive tribe that they're trying to think of, that has surprised them in a Pacific island. One statement of his characterizes well his avidity for seeing new things, for watching the spectacle of unexpected accidents. One day during the most dramatic period of 1848, he said, What a happiness to live during a period so fertile of our extraordinary and unpredictable events. Now, I think that was time of very high turmoil in France. Almost uniquely dedicated to the sciences that deal with organized matter, his spirit had substantially neglected the philosophical sciences. Thus, one could say that his ideas lacked elevation. However, not a single act of his life demonstrates that he ignored the great moral laws imposed on humanity. In short, Mr. Paul Gaimard had a beautiful intelligence. Essentially worthy and honest, naturally kind, he was incapable of causing any loss to anybody. We can only criticize his perhaps excessive friendship with the pleasures, but neither the world nor the pleasures corrupted his reasons or his heart. Thus, Mr. Paul Gaimard was worthy of the friend who misses him and everyone that knew him, by Sardou. And this is, many people are like that. Many people who are intellectually very strong, not spiritually elevated, but nice people, wonderful people. They, you know, they may not go to what you think that should be a church or temple or wherever, right? Being a good Buddhist at a Buddhist temple, they may think all that is not important to them, but they are just naturally nice and wonderful people. That's fine. There's nothing wrong in that. They'll have plenty of lives to catch up on that. And they will go to heaven because they were, and I think this is why this person is in heaven and taking class in heaven. He didn't really emphasize his spiritual side, but he was just naturally, through his instincts, which come with us, our conscious and instincts are embedded in this, into us in each life. His instincts were of being a kind, honest, upright person. That is wonderful. Who can beat that? I would just say, if you want to excel a little bit more, put a little bit of time in spirituality, study. But still, that is a wonderful state. There's nothing wrong in that. Okay, here's for Mrs. Renard. Okay, so she was a hypnotist, deceased in Annonay about a year ago. Although illiterate, she had remarkable lucidity, particularly with respect to medical issues. Okay, so, she was a medium. One of our corresponding members that knew her when she was alive, thinking that some useful teachings may be obtained, sent us a few questions to be addressed to her in case we thought it would be adequate to evoke her. It was what we did in the session of society on January 28th, 1859. Evocation. I'm here. What do you want from me? So remember, she was illiterate. Couldn't read, couldn't write, and she was, she had knowledge about medical issues, probably inspired by spirit. Let's see what they say. Number two, do you have an exact memory of your corporeal existence? And she says, yes, very precise. Can you describe your current situation to us? It is the same as every spirit that inhabits Earth. Generally have the intuition of the good and nonetheless cannot meet perfect happiness. Only reserved to a higher degree of perfection. Number four, when alive, you were a lucid medium. Can you tell us if the lucidity of those days was analogous to the present one as a spirit? No, it was different since I did not have the timeliness and sharpness that my spirit has now. So she is more aware and she's more intellectually sharp. Now I knew, my wife actually knew, I met her once. This wonderful medium that could, in the little town that she grew up in, when I first went to, it's called in Porto, Brazil, not the Porto in Portugal. This is a little town. When I first went there 20 years ago, maybe more, it didn't even have a paved road that you could, it had some paved road inside of it, right? The kind of the rocky road, but there was no pavement to get to the town. She lived in this kind of stick and palm house with dirt floors and chickens going around it. But she was like the resident medium. And she would tell people, oh, I lost my cow. Oh, yeah, your cow's over there. Or she would come and she'd heal people. She told my wife some of her future, which came true, which was amazing. But if you look at it, you think, well, this kind of a, you know, kind of like a shaman of some sort, like, you know, she's just kind of a simple, tight. This is how I'm saying this as for someone not understand Spiritism, right? You would look at that woman, kind of short, out of shape, you know, simple, and like, why did she believe this stuff? Of course, but, you know, things actually happen, right? Later on, I found out how stupid I was. But these people, you should look at them like, oh my God, this person came to Earth to live in this manner to help others. These are the high spirits. These are the ones that will then rise rapidly in heaven, because she gave up all material pleasures, didn't have 2 cents to rub together. And she was just, I mean, a wonderful person. Never complained that I heard of. Helped other people. Was at the birth. Helped my wife. You know, she helped my wife when she was born. So all these things. So when you see these people who look like simple, right? They're not. They're superior to us. See, I know she's much superior to me, that's for sure. Like Chico Xavier, very simple man, loving man. And you could, you know, and if you just looked at him like, well, he's a nice guy, not much there. No, wrong. It's everything there. They're connected to the spirit. They know so much more than we do. And yet they don't lord it over us. They don't say, hey, I'm connected to the spirit world. I am superior to you. No, they don't do that at all. They're humble and just amazingly powerful in what they do. I thought, it, you know, I'd tell you that because so you could, I could spare you the mistakes I made. Okay. In your medium lucidity, in anticipation of spiritual life, that is a separation between spirit and matter. And she answered, it's one of the phases of earthly life, but the earthly life is the same as the celestial life. What do you mean by saying the earthly life is the same as the celestial life? She says, the chain of existences is formed by rings in a continuous sequence. No interruption can preclude its course. One can then say that earthly life is a continuation of the preceding celestial life and the prelude of the future celestial life and so on for all incarnations of the spirits. That means that between two incarnations, there is not an absolute separation as you think. Okay, that makes sense. It's a flow. It's a trajectory. And we'll see what his observation is. During a terrestrial life, the spirit or soul may act independently of matter. And at certain times, the human being enjoys the spirit life, the spiritual life, during the sleep or even the state of Virgil. Concerning that the faculties of the spirits are exercised, despite the presence of the body, there is between the earthly life and beyond the grave a constant correlation that led Miss Reynaud to say the same thing. The following question clarified her thought. Why then is not everyone a medium? I'm using a better word than people would understand. The fact is that you still ignore that all of you are, but in different degrees, not only when you sleep, but awake as well. And Allan Kardec said that. At the least, we are all intuitive mediums, meaning we get ideas from spirits. Now, our job on Earth is to filter those ideas between the good ones and the bad ones. That's why I always filter and weigh everything with your conscience. Kind of like the Egyptians, right? Where you die and they put your heart on this scale, and the scale goes up or down depending how heavy your heart was, right? Same thing with our conscience, right? Have we filtered things to our conscience so we didn't do things that were harmful to ourselves and others? The answer is yes, you're in great shape. And no one's going to say yes all the time. We all have to learn. But if you try, that's the main thing. Number 8, we understand that all of us are more or less mediums during the sleep. But since the dream is kind of imperfect mediumship, but what do you mean by saying that we are also even in the state of Virgil? Don't you have intuitions that you're not aware of and that are nothing but a faculty of the spirit? The poet is a medium. The poet is a medium. Number 9, has your medium faculty contributed to the development of your spirit after death? Yes, a little, she says. At the time of your death, did you remain perturbed for a long time? No, I immediately recognized myself. I was recognized by friends. And this is the great difference between people who are spiritually mature and study spiritism or spiritualism, understand that there's a spirit world, and those who believe heaven is some sort of ethereal thing, or even those who believe there's no such thing. if you have a beginning idea of what heaven is, which is a continuation of yourself, you are yourself, but you're more ethereal and your friends are there at different levels. When you get out of your body, it's like, it's more like when you get out of your body, it's like you just exited a simulator, or you could say you just exited a ride at an amusement park, like Disneyland. Like you went on the Matterhorn, you're on this ride, you had ups and downs, the ride stopped, you got off the ride, and hey, your friends are waiting for you. That's really what life is there. Hopefully you learned something on your ride. Number 11, do you attribute your prompt attachment to your lucid mediumship? Yes, a little. I already knew about the fate of the agonizing, but that would not do me any good if I did not have a soul capable of conquering a better life, thanks to a higher number of good faculties. Is it possibly a good medium not having a spirit of an elevated order? The answer is yes. The faculties are always in agreement. You are really mistaken when you think that these faculties require a certain disposition. No, what you think is good is actually at times bad. If you don't understand it, I will elaborate on this idea. There are some mediums who know the future and tell things that are facts of the past completely ignored in their normal state. There are others who perfectly describe the character of the persons that interrogate them. They tell their ages as well as the amount of money they have in their pockets and so forth. That does not require any real superiority. It is only the exercise of the faculty that the spirit has and that is manifested in the sleeping mediums. What requires a real superiority is the employment of the faculty for the good. It is the consciousness of the good and evil, understanding God better than people do. It is the ability of giving advice, capable of making others advance in the path of good and happiness. And that sums up really of how you should consider mediums. If you're not a medium, and to be a medium, you really need to elevate yourself, because the mediums attract the level of spirits that they are on. But if there's a medium that say, oh, I'm going to charge you X number of dollars and I'll give you your fortune, that medium is only going to be able to reach low spirits. That doesn't mean they're not a medium. I'm telling you right now that they could have that. It may not be like a con job, right? They may have real mediumistic ability, but the spirits that they tap into are not going to tell them anything of the higher importance that a higher spirit would say. And really, to get the messages from the higher spirits, you need to be spiritually advanced, study spiritism. And that is why in spiritist centers, when people practice for mediumship, they go through like a year of reading certain books, like the spirits book, talking about spirits books by Chico Xavier. So they're all on a level, so they understand the spirit world better. And then they go through another year of being at medium's table with other mediums. They're not, you know, it's kind of a mistake for, you know, just to be at a table by yourself. You really should, if you can, reach out and search out for people who have that talent already and have them teach you. Don't try to do that yourself. And if you do, then pray and meditate for a long time and pray and meditate the same time, you know, once a week or whatever. That way the spirits can be around and protect you. Okay, let me carry on. Number 13. Does the employment of the faculty influence the state of the medium spirits after their death? The answer is yes, and a lot, as with the good or bad employment of all faculties given by God. Can you explain to us how come you have medical knowledge without having had any formal education? The answer, it was always the faculty of the spirit. Other spirits advised me. I was a medium. It is the state of all mediums. The medications prescribed by a medium are always indicated by another spirit, or are they also given from instinct, similarly to what happens with the animals that look for the herb that is healthy to them? The answer is they are indicated. If the medium asks for advice, and in case his experience is not sufficient, he knows them by their qualities. Number 16, is the magnetic fluid the agent of the medium's lucidity? No, it is the agent of sleep. Is the magnetic fluid the agent of vision in the state of spirit? No. Do you see us here clearly as when alive with your body? Now I see even better. I see even further into the inner individual. Excuse me. Could you see us in the same way if we were in the dark? The answer is yes, in the same way. The dark light doesn't make a difference. In fact, I just released a video about a spirit coming to earth for the first time after he died, went to heaven and came to earth. And he told his guide, like, it's so dark here, I can't see anything. We should have come back in the daytime. And his guide kind of laughed. He said, no, it's all around you. You just don't see it really well. You're now seeing it from the spirit side, not from the human side. Now look carefully. He goes, yeah, I see some of these dark shadows. He goes, those are immature spirits. They are humans, but very immature. They're dark. Now you'll see some people who are brighter. Those are spiritually more elevated. He goes, ah. He goes, I am seeing them as they are, not what they look like on the outside. He goes, absolutely. So the dark light doesn't mean anything to her. Do you see us better, worse, or as well as when you're alive? Oh, yeah, I said that one. Number 21. What is the agent or intermediary that allows you to see? My spirit. I have no eyes or pupils. I have no retina or lashes. However, I see better than any of you see your neighbor. You see through your eyes, but it is your spirit that sees. So let's talk about that. How can that be? How can you not see when you have no eyes or pupils? Now, we think we see through our eyes or pupils, but that's because the simulation on Earth makes us think we see through our eyes or pupils. Remember, we're put on Earth and we have these blinkers on, and we are in this heavy diving suit where we see only 1/8 of the world around us. And so we have all these things that are on top of our body, just like Paul said in the letter to the Galatians, you put clothes on top of your clothes. We're putting this physical body on top of our paraspirit. So we are not connected to the love of the spirit world, right? We're more isolated, because when we're isolated, then we have stimuli come at us. We have to then emotionally dive deep into ourselves and fix and repair and modify our personality and our character. That's why you're stifled like this. It's more efficient. Now, so again, why didn't you say, well, as a spirit, I have different eyes and pupils? Why didn't she say that? Because she knows who she is. Because she knows she is a encapsulated logical representation of a completely unimaginable complex set of logical structures and programming and data. Her whole personality is encapsulated in this, and she can roam the spirit universe. Now, she can also appear to people as she wants to through her paraspirit. So when she is in a level of heaven, if she wants to look at that, a house, a lake, other spirits, she will have the data interpreted through that way to her. Let me explain another way. I know this is sometimes I probably get off on this and people don't really want to hear it this way, but I try. You have a game on your cell phone and you have this character that goes through different lands, and this character sees a castle or sees a lake, sees a boat. Now, that character doesn't see a boat or lake. It's just a logical representation of the character. Put it on top of an environment that, again, is not a real environment. It's just a screen, right? That was created by programming to say, okay, blue's the ocean, here's a castle. That character knows it's at the door of the castle, not because it sees it, but because logically through interfaces, right? Because interfaces, like we talk to our cell phone, that's an interface, right? We feel something in our body, touch is an interface. These don't have to be, we think they're all physical, but they don't have to be. And their interface for that character on your cell phone says, oh, there's a door in front of me, I should knock on it. That may be programmed. You don't have to tell it to knock. It would just say, get to the door and knock. It will know because the parameters and data around it say, you're next to a door. And this is what the door looks like to you. They'll see within that character what the door is. They can know it two ways. Logically, there's a door. It opens and closes. I have to knock on it. Visually, they could within their minds, they could see the visualization of a door. This is how complex you are. You are so much more than a physical, frail human that can be wiped out any time. No, you're immortal. You're such more than that. So much more. That's why whatever you go through on this life is not that important. I know it's easy to say, hard, you know, it's hard to know. You're so superior to what you are on earth. And you have the capacity to be like gods, that you think that thought is action. Okay, this is the next one. Number 22, are you aware of the darkness? I know it exists to you, but not to me. Observation, this confirms what we've always been told, that the faculty of vision is property inherent to the own nature of the spirit that resides in the whole being. In the body, it is localized. May the second sight or remote viewing be compared to the mediumistic state? Yes, the faculty does not come from the body. Does the magnetic fluid emanate from the nervous system or is it spread into the atmosphere? From the nervous system, but the nervous system takes it from the atmosphere, which is its main source. The atmosphere itself does not have it. It comes from the beings that populate the universe. It is the nothingness that produces it. It is, on the contrary, an accumulation of life and electricity extracted from that crowd of beings. And essentially, it's universal fluid that is fluid created by the intelligent life around it. Is a nervous system fluid its own fluid, or would that be the result of the combination of all other imponderable fluids that penetrate the bodies, like heat, light, and electricity? The answer is yes and no. You don't know the phenomena sufficiently to say that. Your words cannot express what you want to say. Yes. What is the cause of numbness produced by magnetic action? The answer is the agitation produced by the overload of the fluid that the magnetized person accumulates. Oops, that's not what I wanted. Does the magnetic power, the magnetizer, someone like the like a hypnotist, someone who's giving, curing, depend on his physical organization? The answer is yes, but also depends much on his character. In a word, it depends on him. 28, what are the moral qualities that can help the medium in the development of their faculty? And the answer is the good ones. You asked about the ones that can help. What are the defects that can mostly harm it? Ill faith. What are the most essential qualities of the magnetizer? The heart, always firm, good intentions, the disinterest. What are defects that mostly harm them? Bad inclinations, or even worse, the desire to cause harm. And naturally what you need to erase from yourself. No jealousy, no urge for revenge, you know, pride as low as possible. When alive, did you used to see the spirits in their state? And the answer is yes. Why don't all mediums see them? They see at times in several degrees of clarity. Where does the faculty of seeing the spirits come from in certain non-mediumistic persons? The answer, this is a gift from God, as intelligence and benevolence to others is a gift from God. And you'll be given gifts. And some people can see spirits. It's all a gift from God. How you use it, up to you. Number 35. Does the faculty result from a special physical organization? No. Number 36, can it be lost? Yes, as much as it can be acquired. And it usually can be lost by when you debase yourself morally. In fact, we'll see. What are the causes that may determine its loss? And the answer is, we've said that already. The malevolent intentions. As a first condition, it is necessary. The intent of making good use of that faculty. Given that, one needs to verify if such a favor is deserved, since it is not given uselessly. The difficulty to those who have that faculty is that it meddles with the unfortunate human passion that you well know, pride, even when there is a desire of seeking the best results. They brag about what is really God's work and many times want to take advantage of that. Goodbye now. 38, where are you going from here? To my occupations. Number 39, could you tell us more about your occupations? The answer is I have some, like you do. I try to learn, and for that I take part in society of those who are better than me. While resting, I do the good deeds. My life moves on with the hope of reaching a greater happiness. We have no material need to satisfy, and consequently, our whole activity aims at our moral progress. So, another wonderful area. So, if you really, for those who are interested, if you want to know more about the spirit world, the spirit universe, and all its complexity, a spirit, how it rises, how these people are talking, how they rise, how they gather education, how they go from one level of heaven to the next, I suggest you read my book, The Spirit Realm, Spiritism Has Revealed the Reality of Our Existence. God bless.